the underground bunker of the Civitas Studio in Raleigh, North Carolina. It's Civitalk with your hosts, Brooke Medina and Ray Nothstein. We're here to connect culture with civics, making it relevant to your daily life. And dare we say, existence at a time where too many are triggered and offended. So, relax. But buckle up and let's wade into the deep end. What's really happening in your old North State?
Welcome to another edition of Civitalk. It's Brooke. Brooke is back. She was out last week. I know a lot of her fans were missing her, but she is back here. We're going to have a fun day. We're going to talk field trips because we've got education in the news, and we've got a lot of teachers going to be taking a field trip to the Capitol to protest their pay.
Is that what that's
again.
Called?
A field trip? Yeah, they did it last year. They're doing it again. And we will discuss, after that, the abortion issue here in North Carolina, the Born Alive
Abortion.
Survivors Protection Act. I'm sorry, I was getting confused again because we were going back and forth between the 2002 and this current bill. But the Born Alive Abortion Survivors Protection Act, which is being debated at the federal and state level here in North Carolina as well at the General Assembly today. And if we have time, we'll talk a little Medicaid expansion because that's a big deal here now because Republicans just introduced a bill on Medicaid expansion. They're calling it the North Carolina Health Insurance for Working Families Act. Those are the Republicans in the House. It looks like there's a good segment in the Senate against this bill. We'll see how it shakes out. We have lots of commentary at Civitas, nccivitas.org. Go over there and check it out. But let's have fun first. Let's have some good conversation about favorite field trips.
Okay. Do you want me to kick it off?
Yeah, kick it off, Brooke. Tell me about your absolute favorite field trip.
My favorite or my most memorable? Because they are two different
memorable.
Things.
Yeah, mine would be different too.
Okay. So for my favorite, actually, I'm going to start with my most memorable, then I'll end with my favorite.
Okay.
So my most memorable field trip was when I grew up part of my life in Fayetteville, North Carolina, so military town. And so our teachers decided to take us, I think in sixth grade, on a field trip to the hospital there on base. It's called Womack Army Medical Center. And so we're touring the hospital. That was all fun and fine. And then one of the doctors decides that he wants to give us a tour at the very, very bottom of the hospital. And little did we know that he was actually taking us to the morgue. And so we toured the morgue, and he took us into one of these rooms and pretended. My guess is that there really weren't body parts in these jars, but there were things in these jars, suspended in liquid. And then he takes us into another room and pulls open the morgue door, whatever that little thing is that they put the bodies on. And he opens it and he was tricking us and telling us that somebody was actually in there, and he hurry up and yanks it open and there's no one in there. But I will never forget that because I was really, really scared for that.
Did
that
it help
whole
you
day.
Face your own mortality as a youngster? Did you?
No,
think
it just freaked me
it
out.
It freaked you out. You didn't think deeper about death and end of life issues?
No.
See, that's how I would have thought of that in that trip. I would have
in sixth
really,
grade?
Oh, for sure. Yeah, I would have really internalized
guess
that.
Guess I'm not as deep as you, Ray.
And thought deeply. Well, I just tend to like internalize things and think about them for a long time. But I would say my most memorable field trip, I would say my favorite, if this counts as a field trip, because when I lived in Egypt, I was on the swim team and we would go to Europe for swim meets a lot. And we went to London one year. That was a blast. Brussels the year before. And that was just fun. But as we were leaving, the Irish Republican Army threw out some mortars on the runway. So we got to stay a couple extra days.
Oh my goodness.
So that was a blast too. We had fun. Brussels the year before was fun too. So those were like big trips that I remember. Probably the most memorable, or one of the most memorable, I got in trouble in sixth grade. And I told you about this earlier, Brooke, but we went to, I think, Diamond Head Park, and it may have been after a Romeo and Juliet play in downtown Honolulu.
Oh, this makes it even worse.
It does, doesn't it? And I remember we're just kind of having lunch at this park or having a snack or something. We got off the bus, and I remember some friends daring me, telling me that this girl, I think her name was Kelly. I'm married to a Kelly now, but totally different girl. This is in Hawaii, sixth grade, saying that she had a tampon in her purse. And they told me to steal it. Or they dared me that you won't go in and get it. And so I just remember going in and getting it and running around with it
and
yelling. And I got in a lot of trouble from the teacher. She chewed me out, rightfully so. That was totally wrong. So Kelly, if you're out there, I don't know, I remember her last name, but I totally apologize. That was a horrific thing to do. And it's actually outside of my character. I think I just got peer pressured a little bit into doing something. And I don't even know if I really knew what, I knew what a tampon was to some degree, but I don't think I had a deeper sense of
okay.
the private moment or whatever, So
Ladies and gentlemen, that is Ray Notestein.
You just got to come clean sometimes and apologize.
Do you feel better having confessed this now?
A little bit, yeah.
That's good.
Yeah.
That's good.
I'm sure in this Me Too era, I'm sure it will come back up at some point.
Now that you're about 40 years old, I feel like this is the time for reckoning, and you're just really reflecting on life. I mean, you took my morgue field trip to, you know, as an opportunity to reflect on our mortality, and the tampon one to reflect on what a bad person you were in sixth grade, apparently. But
yeah, I was definitely would act out from occasion. And then when I got to middle school, I couldn't because kids were actually getting arrested, and I knew that there's no way I could get arrested. I'd get in too much trouble.
Yeah.
So I had to tone it down some. But another field trip. All right. Don't cut off. I think I got some good field trips, bro.
Okay. All right. Keep going.
My first field trip that I remember was to the maple syrup farm in New Hampshire.
Ooh. You had such exotic and fun sounding field trips. Here, I went to the morgue.
Yeah.
And Ray goes to Belgium.
I did have
in
Hawaii.
Egypt.
In Hawaii, I had a friend. My morgue story is I had a friend, his mom worked at the morgue.
Okay.
On the Navy base, which was right next to Hickam Air Force Base. And so we wanted to do this thing. We were into ghosts and like seeing if there was not extraterrestrial, but paranormal activity at the morgue because people had been dying. So we took tape recorders, dressed in all black. And she let us, dropped us off, gave us like the key. We actually went into the morgue at night.
Wow.
And set up these tape recorders because we wanted to hear ghosts and stuff. And of course, this was probably about fifth or sixth grade too. We didn't actually hear anything, but we got each other all freaked out, you know, because we had built it up all
Yeah, oh, I bet you did. Especially because growing up, that was, I don't know if horror movies are still a big thing now, but I know probably in our era, growing up, there was Scream and Freddy Krueger and things like that, or Krueger. I don't even know his name. I don't watch those sort of movies. So anyways, yeah, I can Blair Witch Project, those sort of things. But okay, well, I wanted to read a few field trips that other people went on when I asked this question on Twitter. So, well, hey, here, I'm going to read this one from our producer, Chris. Hey, Chris, are you listening over there? I'm going to read yours. He said that his most memorable field trip was the Modern Art Museum, but not good memorable. He said, though I appreciate art now, in fourth grade, we just spent the whole time laughing and pointing at what we thought to be very revealing statues and paintings. Yeah, I don't know why anybody decided to take a fourth grader to an art museum and think that they were actually going to appreciate the art there, but yes, I've actually taken young kids to the art museum, and I know what you're talking about, Chris. Angela Humphrey, she said, my 12-year-old just lit up about the time her first grade public school wanted $9 for an in-school field trip. I remember being so disappointed at the thought of this. I refused permission. They were utterly confused. They offered to pay, and we went to Marbles instead. Well, Marbles sounds like a better field trip than in-school. Another friend went to Toronto in the fifth grade, Toronto, Canada.
I've actually never been. I've been right by Toronto several times, but I don't think I've ever been there.
Yeah, she said she lived pretty close to the border, but they went there for fifth grade. That's pretty cool. I've never been to Canada. And then Valerie.
It's pretty boring.
Yeah, well, Justin Trudeau is the prime minister.
Vancouver might be cool. I haven't been there. But.
Okay, and then Valerie said, eighth grade field trip to Washington, D.C. I was the kid who wanted to take in everything, read in-depth about each monument and every exhibit, asking many questions, and she was left behind twice.
Wow.
Poor Valerie. Poor Valerie. Oh, and here's the one that tops it all. Joe Catanacci, who is our friend from the Big Talker radio station, he said that his most memorable field trip in school was the World Trade Center.
Wow. Speaking of 9/11, in Egypt, we went to the Al-Hakim Mosque. That was one of our big field trips. And it was pretty cool.
Was it beautiful?
Yeah, it's absolutely beautiful. And I'll tell you a little story just real quickly. When I moved to Egypt, you know, Obama talks about in his biography or his autobiography, I forgot the name of it, but talks about being like really enthralled by the prayer.
Okay.
And you know, a lot of conservatives picked up on that. They're like, you know, the call to prayer and the Muslim call to prayer and stuff. They picked up on that. Said, hey, he's a Muslim, blah, blah, blah. And I get where he's coming from because it is a very eerie sort of draws you in. And it's very enchanting. And I remember being at a time just for a little while in Egypt being like, wow, Islam is just so cool because just some of the calls to prayer and stuff.
Yeah.
It just really, I think, can have a very emotional impact on you because it has an ancient, archaic sound, but is also can be kind of soothing.
That's an interesting way to describe it. But I agree. I have never been over there to the Middle East, but I have just heard that call to prayer, and I think it's mesmerizing in a way. Yeah, so these are some of our field trips. If you're watching on Facebook, go ahead and tell us what your most memorable field trip was. But my last one, we don't have time to really camp on this, but my favorite field trip, even if it wasn't the most memorable, was the water treatment facility. I loved touring it. It was fascinating.
Really?
Yes, it was so interesting to watch how they clean the water. I don't know why it was cool, but it was cool.
I have a cousin that does that for a living. He's very good at it.
Good.
Yeah. He does that in Traverse City, Michigan, and he's
we need clean water.
Absolutely.
We need people that know how to do that. So anyways, but hey, Ray, let's talk about something that was in a Senate committee yesterday, and this has made national and state headlines ever since, I would say January, but that's the Born Alive Abortion Survivor Protection Act, and that was introduced yesterday in committee in the Senate. There was a lot of debate around it, as you can imagine. Planned Parenthood was mobilizing their activist to protest it, and so there was a long line outside of the General Assembly because people were waiting to go in and sit in on the committee. What Planned Parenthood said about it was, politicians in Raleigh are trying to restrict access to safe and legal abortion yet again. They've introduced SB 359, an extreme anti-woman's health bill written by politicians, not doctors. This bill has no basis in medical science and is designed to shame patients and criminalize doctors for a medical practice that doesn't even exist. So there's a lot to unpack there, but let's start first with this having no basis in medical science. What are your thoughts on that claim that they make? How does protecting the life of a child who survived an abortion have no basis in medical science? Where's the logic there?
It's interesting to see sort of the left mobilize on this issue, because back in 2002, I mean, I vividly remember the debate during the early parts of the George W. Bush presidency on this issue. He signed the Born Alive Infant Protection Act, not to be confused with this one. And the reason that it's coming up again is because there's really no enforcement mechanism in the Born Alive Infant Protection Act, which just basically claimed that an aborted baby that is born alive is afforded protection and afforded all the rights and human dignity of a human person. So this debate is re-energized. Republicans obviously see a big opening because the polling is good for them. And so it's going up in states across the union. It's a big debate now in Washington, D.C. In 2002, this bill passed on a unanimous voice vote in the Senate. So there was really no opposition to a bill like this, and to see sort of the remobilization, the extremism by Planned Parenthood, I think just says something about our culture, kind of where we're moving. But it says the power of groups like Planned Parenthood. It shows their power. It shows the power of the pro-abortion movement, even though I think pro-life has made a lot of inroads in America. I think it just shows how much money and how much backing they have behind them in the establishment, whether that be in if you want to talk about maybe sort of a science establishment or an intelligentsia establishment, or just the Democratic Party. And so celebrities, you've had several celebrities saying that they're going to boycott states that pass these bills.
Wasn't Alyssa Milano one of them?
Yeah, she was one in Georgia, right? Because Georgia's debating this bill too. And I think the governor is going to sign it, or did sign it. So someone may know more about that than I do. But I remember seeing that in the news, that the governor signed it or is about to sign it. So, I mean, it's just heartbreaking to me. I remember going to a Michigan Right to Life event, and Melissa Oden, who survived a saline abortion, spoke, and it was just very heart-wrenching. I don't remember everything about her story, but I remember that a saline abortion basically burns the baby alive mm-hmm. in the womb, and burns them from the inside out. And so I just remember hearing her story, and it was hard to hear, and it's just hard for me to really wrap my arms around this whole notion that someone would be against this bill, because I don't really see any reason. It doesn't do anything. If you are a pro-abortion, it doesn't do anything to change current law. All it does is say a baby that survives abortion will be medically protected at the facility. Mm-hmm. So I don't see any problems with it at all. I don't know. I don't know where you kind of fish to find problems. I think it shows that they don't want to cede one yard on this issue, and so they see this as an issue that they won't cede even a yard on. So they're going to fight it.
Well, I also believe that they see this as blurring the lines between an unborn child and a born child, so much so that it will bolster pro-life arguments further down the road. Because if people are able to recognize, this is obviously very clear, but if they're able to understand that the language or the term abortion can be paired up with a child that is actually, in fact, born alive, it blurs this line or this distinction that they have tried so hard to make about the fetus, the unborn baby, not actually being a human being moments before birth, but then all of a sudden deserving full human legal protections immediately thereafter. And so I think that this they recognize that this really is, if they hope to keep abortion just a common practice here in the United States, they can't cede any ground. So that this is just one of those bills that I would say, if you're pro-life, make sure you are giving your senator your opinion on this, because it will, I would believe inevitably be up for a vote very soon. And I wanted to read really quickly what Senator Kravick, Joyce Kravick, said about this, because yesterday in the committee meeting, it got pretty heated, because those that are pro-abortion and are against this infanticide bill are saying, you know, it's not necessary. It's a rare instance when a child survives an abortion and is born. But it really doesn't matter, right? Because if these lines are blurred and they're willing to not respect human life at any stage, if it's not a wanted life, then it calls for our attention. But what Senator Kravick said was, we're not talking about getting in between a woman and their doctor. We're talking about babies that are born alive. They are no longer within their mother's womb. They are laying on a table, breathing, hearts beating. That's what we're talking about today. We're talking about their right to health care, and I would add their right to life.
Yeah, I don't think you can say any better than that. I mean, it's a clear-cut issue, and I think one of the things that just is so heartbreaking and disappointing is that I can't imagine a physician just looking at, I mean, I can't imagine physicians that do abortions, but I can't imagine a physician looking at a baby on the table and deciding, whether it's with the mother or with anybody else, deciding that the baby doesn't deserve to live, doesn't deserve to have access to care. So to me, it's evil. That's what it is. I mean, I don't know how else to really couch it or try to explain it away. I mean, it's pure evil. It's sad that we have this in our culture. It's sad that we have really just sort of no recognition by so many people about the human life issue. Because look, I mean, the technology has changed. I think more and more people are realizing that's a life. I mean, that it wasn't before. I don't know how people explain that away. But because technology is changing so much, it's becoming clearer and clearer, I think, to more and more people. And so you're talking about murder, and I don't think it matters too much on the varying degrees of it. I mean, every human life has dignity, is precious. And so, you know, I just hope that the culture changes on this issue, and that people would be against a bill like this just shows sort of the evil nature in our society. Mm-hmm. And I just don't think that you could be a good person and sort of support. You know, we throw out these terms of like, just good people can disagree, but I don't know about on this issue. I mean, this is when you're going into areas that are, you know, when you talk about infanticide or letting some child die because of some choice that is sort of supposedly used, then it's just very murky and deadly waters that you're treading into.
I would like to add to that a lot of women are victims of this too, though. So yes, I understand that there is that the argument that the pro-choice movement has made is completely debunked. It's bupkis, and they can't defend it. But a lot of women, whether it's right or not, which it's not right, but they do feel like this is the only option that will allow them to continue on with their life plans. And so those that are like that and struggling with this decision, those are the ones that I think that we need to make sure we're not alienating either by our argument, but reaching out to them and helping them choose life. Because not only do we want abortion to be illegal, we want it to be unimaginable, unconscionable, something that cannot be done because in good conscience I cannot take another life. And that boils down to actually reaching the moms. And so I think that that's a vital part of this conversation that pro-lifers in particular have to be very conscious of and make sure that we are being winsome in this argument. We're not compromising on anything, but we're being very conscious that we need to reach the moms that are struggling with this decision as well. But anyways, so keep watching that, though. I think we have a lot of hope that that bill is going to be something that passes. And it's very much, it will be good to see where legislators in our state stand on this issue, because that's going to be important going into 2020 for re-elections. Mm-hmm. Do you support infanticide or do you oppose it?
And it'll be fun and it'll be fun to see the celebrities that come out and say they're going to boycott North Carolina again. I always appreciate that.
They boycott us for everything, right? So anyways, okay, let's talk about the teacher strike, though. That's something we've asked our Facebook audience their opinion on as well. But it's May Day. It's coming up. It's on May 1st. Ray, what's a little bit of history about May 1st?
Oh, yeah. You have a lot of communist and Marxist links, socialist links to labor movements in the former Soviet Union, certainly in the United States as well and Western Europe. So May Day has a very significant meaning for socialist movements that want to agitate basically the labor against management, in this case, the taxpayers in North Carolina. So there is that link to it. And I think that they chose that for a reason. And I think there's a broader movement going on in this country because right to work is becoming more popular in the Midwest. And I think there's an outreach to try to change North Carolina and to move the needle here in terms of maybe, making unions stronger here in this state, because the left is losing ground and the Midwest, they know people realize if they don't have to support a union or pay some of their salary towards a union, that they're probably not going to. And so they need new openings. But, you know, on this teacher strike issue, 5 consecutive years of pay raises is now, according to the John Locke Foundation, North Carolina's number 20th in the nation when it comes to teacher pay. When you factor in cost of living, they're number 2 in the Southeast now.
When the Democrats were in charge, weren't we like number 40 something?
46, I believe.
But so. Yet, not a peep out of the NCAE during that time, it seems like.
No.
Not as much. They weren't mobilizing like this.
I think whether you think teachers are underpaid, you know, you can certainly make that argument. If you factor in that they're off for a summer, then maybe that their salary is equivalent to their level of education. You can make that argument too. But I think one of the things that is going on here is you're seeing sort of people realizing that this is just political. You know,
it's
people are realizing
yep.
It's all about electing left-wing Democrats in North Carolina. And I think you'll see that from some of the speeches. I think if you actually went and saw the event, I think you'll see a more militant crowd. They're upset that the Republicans still control the General Assembly. They want that to change. They want the, you know, they say they're going to advocate for minimum wage. I don't know what that has to do with North Carolina teachers. They're going to go advocate
for Medicaid expansion.
Again, another issue unrelated to them. They are on the state health care plan. They have access to good health care plans. So it's just interesting to watch because I think it's just very political. That's what this is about. It's about, you know, strengthening Roy Cooper's position for re-election. It's about electing more left-wing Democrats in North Carolina. And I think most people, I think if you're on the left, you can recognize that. I mean, I don't think that when you see that point, that you're really losing out if you're being honest with yourself. But that's what it's about. And so, you know, if you're for that, then you're probably okay with a teacher strike.
That's a good point. But let's talk a little bit about some of the numbers here. So there is an actual cost to this. If your child is in school and they're in a school district where they have schools have canceled, you are obviously now finding yourself having to make other arrangements for your child or your work schedule for that particular day, because they didn't choose to strike on a weekend. They didn't choose to wait until after school was in session or some other holiday. They wanted to make sure that it was on May Day. And of course, we are going to be skeptical of the reasoning behind that, as well as we're skeptical of their communist socialist symbol that they used, the NCAE decided to use. So Ray is running the... to put your laptop on mute for you.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
You're much more tech savvy than me.
There's just a little mute button.
Because I'm older.
We use that. That's true. Poor thing. We're going to be bringing you Meals on Wheels soon.
I know.
But let's talk about some of these numbers, though. When it comes to this teacher strike, 500,000 North Carolina children will now not have school that particular day because of the school districts closing. So here are the districts that are so far saying that they will be closed so that their teachers can strike. Chapel Hill, Carrboro, no surprise there. Charlotte, Mecklenburg, Durham County, Guilford County, Lexington City, Winston-Salem, Forsyth, and Wake County. So there you have it. There are the schools that are going to be closed, and I'm sure, like Domino, the rest of them will fall pretty soon, or maybe some other ones soon. But yeah, we want to hear from you. What are your thoughts on this? We say that, yeah, it's highly
political. And I would love to hear from people, especially if there's any teachers, ask, write down what a fair wage is, because that was one of the things we had a problem getting at the NCAE rally when we went last year. We asked them, you know, some of them were saying they were making 40 something thousand. Some were saying they're making 50,000. Some were saying 60 that had been in teaching longer. But what is a fair wage? I guess if that's the main issue, I would love to hear, you know, maybe you say I've been teaching 10 years. I should be making $75,000 a year. What's a fair wage? Because I think that was the thing that was disappointing to me, because I was hoping to hear that from the teachers when I went down there. None of them would offer. You know, they would offer that I don't make enough, but they wouldn't offer a dollar amount.
Yeah, we did not get a dollar amount from anybody. And I would assume that that's intentional, right? There are these goalposts that have to constantly get moved. And again, like I mentioned earlier, the teacher pay was a lot lower, and I would say the teachers were treated with a lot less respect several years ago, or a number of years ago, before the conservative reforms. But even so, education comprises 58% of our budget. Now, mm-hmm. that includes also the UNC school system. But 58% of our budget already goes to education. So don't tell me it's not a priority for us here in North Carolina. It absolutely is. But we also believe in making sure that students have access to the best education possible. And we're not interested in entertaining a union-like organization that says they're for the kids, says that they're advocating for teachers when they're really only using them as pawns to elect progressives.
Yeah, and I think one of the big issues we haven't touched on yet, but Donald and I touched on it last week, is you've got students that Hurricane Harvey that missed weeks and weeks. Onslow County is one county that you had basically
Hurricane
students
Florence.
Out. Hurricane Florence, yeah. Mm-hmm. 6 weeks of school missed in some parts of the state.
Yeah.
And you have, you know, most North Carolina families make less than teachers. The household income is less than a teacher's salary in North Carolina. And so that's a big problem for a lot of people to go out and find childcare if they have younger kids, especially. And so you put a lot of people in a bind. Maybe they have to take a day off of work. Maybe they have to go find someone to babysit their children because they need to work. They can't afford to take a day off. And so it just inconveniences a lot of people. And I think it's something that the Mark Johnson, the North Carolina superintendent of education, chief superintendent, has said that he'd like for them to strike on a different day that is not a school day. And they come up here when the legislature, General Assembly is in session, and they could still come up here and have their protest.
Right.
And I think that's fair. I think that's, you know, you shouldn't be having a political rally on the taxpayer's dime. I think that's, most people should be in agreement on that, mm-hmm. whether it's right or left, you know,
yeah.
whatever your cause.
Yep. Bob Libke, our director of policy, just wrote something about Wake County closing. And he said, you know, if teachers still get paid for this day when they're out there protesting and striking, that's going to cost taxpayers millions of dollars to keep these, to continue to pay them for work that they have not done. And so, anyways, we're going to keep you guys posted. We will actually probably be live there. We may even do a Facebook Live video or Civitalk recording there on May 1st, but we'll keep you posted. But again, chime in with your own thoughts. We're close to out of time, but I did want to touch on healthcare because that is such a big issue right now here in the state of North Carolina, especially as it pertains to Medicaid expansion. And we wanted to take a moment to distinguish between the House Republicans and the Senate Republicans when it comes to health care here in North Carolina and how they're both handling it. It's a tale of two legislatures, I would say. Can you unpack that a little bit?
Yeah, I don't remember the exact name of the bill. I know Leah would. I don't know if it was HB 104.
But the North Carolina Health Insurance for Working Families.
No, I was talking about the free market, you know, getting rid of certificate of need and some of those other deregulation on the Senate side. I can't remember the actual name of the bill, but it offers up some good benchmarks for free market reforms on healthcare, basically knocking down some of the regulation behind state lines that drives up costs. I think one of the things we have to remember about healthcare is most people, Brooke, are not concerned about access so much as they are cost. Cost is a big driver of the problem.
Mm-hmm.
Now, there's certainly some access problems with pre-existing conditions that have been alleviated to some extent under Obamacare, and even Republicans now are not going to change those. I mean, Trump says that he's going to roll out a new healthcare proposal here. I don't know if it was later this year or next year before re-election, or he's going to fix healthcare. And he talked about protecting pre-existing conditions too, but he wants to make a reform. But I think that's one of the big problems with healthcare is we don't actually address cost. I mean, we can ask the government to do more and more and take more of our money and taxpayer dollars, but if we don't address cost, then we can't actually fix the system.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think the Republicans on the Senate side are looking at actually addressing costs in North Carolina. And, you know, on the House side, Republicans are just throwing up another Medicaid expansion bill, which I don't fully understand because of, you know, all the work we've done, but all the consequences it'll mean for our state budget, that 90% match or that 90% subsidy is not going to be there indefinitely. Even John Kasich, who is the former governor of Ohio and the big Republican Medicaid expansion champion, has said that 90% number is going to change at some point.
That's so, the federal contribution
to
our state.
So that's why a lot of people are just, you know, running into it, is because there's that 90% contribution. But that's going to change. And look, I mean, North Carolina is a state that is already maxed out on their budget and their unfunded liability. So adding another government program to drive up unfunded liabilities to the state is a big mistake, in my opinion.
Right. While they want to also raise teacher pay yet again. So, you know, there's all these asks, but where's the money going to come from? It's going to come from you, the taxpayer,
yep.
And your taxes are going to go up if that happens. And so I would just like to end talking about why even the House Republican proposal of Medicaid expansion, which they've called the North Carolina Families Working Families Act, why that's misguided. And really what it is because it's another form of Medicaid and Medicaid expansion. And Medicaid was designed to help the truly needy, not those people that need to go to work. And almost 78% of those that would be covered under expansion are childless or they don't have dependents in the home, able-bodied working age adults. So those people, they should be able to access affordable health care, but Medicaid is not the program that was designed for them. And if we continue to go this route and continue to expand who qualifies for Medicaid. It's just another step down the road to Medicare for all. And that's obviously going to be something that will dominate the 2020 news cycle as Democrats and Republicans duke it out during elections. But anyways, feel free. We've got a lot of resources on this on our website, so feel free to check it out at nccivitas.org. But we appreciate you guys joining us this week.
Yeah, thank you. Go to Google Play. Go to iTunes and rate CivitTalk. Give us a good rating.
5 stars.
That's all you have to do. If you give us a good rating, we won't charge you a nickel for this podcast. That's all we're asking. All right. We appreciate y'all.
Thank you, guys. Have a good week. Bye-bye.